Greetings. Greetings once again. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors. You can sit back and relax. You don't need to do any more work. You've worked hard all week. Maybe you haven't had a chance to pay attention to the news and the events of the week. And if that's the case, you'll probably live longer for it. We, or at least I don't know about my extremely attractive audio engineer. I don't know if she generally pays attention to the events of the week or not, but I do, and it's probably killing me, but I'm doing it. All right. In fact, speaking of dying, let's go to Western civilization and check in with it at the Copacabana Beach in Brazil, where Shakira, well, the headline reads thusly from my Yahoo Average Moron feed: Shakira thrills 2 million fans on Rio's Copacabana Beach. So now I've seen this name Shakira. I'm not familiar with her body of work. I think Shakira came to fame after I had stopped paying attention to all of that. And then she has remained famous, according to the article, for more than 20 years. How do I know that? Because superfan Graciela says, Shakira, she loves Brazil. She loves Brazil, and the love she has for us is the love we have for her, she said, sporting a large she-wolf tattoo on her back. That's Shakira's symbol, is the she-wolf. And Shakira's fans have the she-wolf tattooed on various parts of their body. Shakira addressed the crowd of 2 million people on one beach. That hasn't happened, like, since the Exodus. So anyway, now, I'm not saying it's a sign of the end times or anything. I'm just saying that 2 million people on the beach. Anyway, she said, Brazil, I love you. It's magical to think that here we are, millions of souls together, ready to sing, dance, be moved, and remind the world what really matters. Unquote. Was that actual tape that we had? Did we have a... I didn't know we had a correspondent on site there recording things. And, yeah, that was... by the way, apparently the implication here is that Shakira is convinced that singing, dancing, and being moved apparently is what really matters. And she reminded the world of what really matters over the weekend. 2 million people on the beach there in Rio de Janeiro. And anyway, Western civilization has devolved to the level of Baal worshipers, tattooing their idol onto their body and all of that. It's just sad to see. Meanwhile, let's check in with the war effort there in Iran. The war is not over yet. Now, the 60-day deadline, I don't know if it's already passed or if it's about to pass, but I can assure you it's going to pass. Now, those of you who are who have your MAGA hat on backwards and you have We the People tattooed on your forearm, I know that Trump can do no wrong, and you can make excuses all you want. He said it would be 60 days. Here we are at 60 days, and, well, let me just read from the story. I don't want to make, they're already turning off the show because I've, Trump spoke to, he was asked a question, did you try to deliver weapons to the Kurds to be delivered into Iran in order to trigger a violent uprising against the Iranian government? Please tell us, Mr. Trump, you're not so stupid that that's actually what you tried to do. And he answered, yes, that's what he tried to do. He said, I'm not happy with the delivery of the weapons. I'm not thrilled with it. but a small amount of weapons were sent, and we'll see who has them. But I'm not happy with what happened with the Kurds. Unquote. That's the President of the United States answering. He says the Kurds did not deliver the weapons. So it's this Donald Trump, the President of the United States, in his arrogance and stupidity, attacks a 2,500-year-old nation of 100 million people and smuggles a few weapons to some loosely affiliated Muslim terrorist organizations next door, known as the Kurds. And he has no plan beyond that and the shiny air campaign and his half-baked plan to blockade. Folks, I think we're in trouble on this one. That's all. I mean, color me skeptical. I hope I'm wrong. I think we're in trouble on this one. Put your MAGA hat on tight and hold on. This ride might go on for a while, and it might get bumpy. All right. Meanwhile, Spirit Airlines, which we've commented upon here at the Worldview, going back, well, ever since the first time I rode on Spirit Airlines, which was one of the most horrible. In fact, I think the first time I ever got a ticket on Spirit Airlines, I don't think there was a plane, if I remember correctly. That was the first time I ever showed up at a gate and they said, there is no plane. And I and other passengers looked at one another and asked the obvious question. What do you mean there is no plane? There is no plane. And there was no plane. Anyway, Spirit Airlines was on the brink of bankruptcy. The government offered them a lifeline in order to save 14,000 jobs. That's according to the socialists in the government who want you to be scared. They said, oh, it's 14,000 jobs. We got to do everything we can to try to him and a hem and a ha. Because 14,000 jobs. Well, it turns out the bondholders wouldn't take the deal that Trump offered, and Spirit Airlines is now winding down business in bankruptcy, not even trying to fly one more flight. They're done. And if there was ever a company in all of history that should have been allowed to die, Spirit Airlines was it. I know people are taking shots at the Democrats because supposedly the Democrats stopped Spirit from merging with JetBlue, and that's the problem. And I'm sorry, I've flown JetBlue, and I would not want JetBlue to have anything to do with Spirit. It would be better for Spirit to die than to infect JetBlue. And by the way, the same goes for Frontier anymore. Unflyable. I won't fly it. I can't fly it. I had to make a determination years ago not to fly Spirit. Anyway, don't cry about Spirit. It needed to die. It'll be better. And what was the point of, oh, the 14,000 jobs. Trust me, the 14,000 people who are released from Spirit, they're not going to end up with tin cups under a bridge. They're going to get other jobs, better jobs, some of them. Some of them will get lousy jobs, but hey, Spirit's a pretty lousy job. It's pretty hard to go down from Spirit Airlines, no matter what happens. I mean, with a tin cup under a bridge, I think that's the only thing lower than working at Spirit Airlines. See, they issue you a shopping cart. And anyway, meanwhile, while all that was going on, Democrat Barney Frank checked into hospice care over this past week. This is being reported by the Gateway Pundits, and it comes to us from the Two Gays Don't Make a Right file. It's a new file that we have. So, and if you know about the Gateway Pundit, you know that it's run by Jim Hoft, who's a sodomite, and his brother, who I think is not, and he's some sort of Republican. I'm not sure about the other Hoft, but it's the Hoft brothers. One of them being, in my opinion, a plant of the devil in order to get conservative Republicans and Christians to normalize sodomites. That's why Jim Hoft exists. That's his goal in life. Here's the article about Barney Frank. Jim Hoft immediately says Barney Frank, 86, is in hospice. He's suffering from congestive heart failure. And then the next paragraph is Jim Hoft criticizing Barney Frank over the 2009 Dodd-Frank bill. So how do you announce that a guy is in hospice and he's about to die, and then you bring up some legislative gobbledygook that nobody can even remember or even cares about? At least not in the context of the story that Barney Frank's going to die. It's because Jim Hoft is a tool, and he is an expert at throwing bones to relatively stupid Republicans. Oh, yeah, Barney Frank, I remember. You remember Dodd-Frank? Oh, he destroyed the economy, Barney Frank. He's a patient. And so the relatively stupid Republicans subscribe to the Gateway Pundit, not realizing that the point of the article was not to throw you a bone and remind you of what a bad Democrat Barney Frank was. The whole point of the article was so that Jim Hoft could write this. Barney Frank is remaining in his home at Ogunquit, Maine, where he moved with his husband after retiring from Congress. And all the relatively stupid Republicans read right past that looking for, well, does he have anything in here about how bad Barney Frank was, that rotten, dirty Democrat? And they don't realize that Jim Hoft just further normalized sodomy in their minds, in the minds of the conservative Republicans and the Christians, by slipping in the whole his husband thing. Well, I noticed it here at the Weekly Worldview. We notice things like this because our conscience hasn't yet been seared by our loyalty to the Republican Party. And we know how bad Barney Frank was. And I'm sure I was no fan of Dodd-Frank and all of that. I'm certain of that if you go back and check the record. But now that Barney Frank is in hospice, and by the way, I made fun of Barney Frank for 20 years on the air. In fact, my Barney Frank impression was called by many perhaps my greatest impression ever of anyone. Because I always had the ability to get right down to the heart of how Barney Frank sounded. But now that he's gone into hospice, and here's what he says, Barney Frank, I have a quote from him. Listen to this. I'm 86 years old. I've made it longer than I thought. At some point, my heart's just going to give out. It's reaching that stage. And so I'm taking it easy at home and dealing with it by relaxing. Unquote. That's a quote from Barney Frank on the fact that he's about to die and meet God. And Barney Frank is so delusional that he's comfortable spending his last few days before he meets the God who's going to judge the destiny of his eternal soul. He's actually so deluded that he's able to take it easy at home and deal with it by relaxing with another sodomite there in the house. So let this be a cautionary tale to all of you, including you Republicans who barely noticed the phrase, his husband. I had to point that out for you people. Too busy frothing at the mouth over Dodd-Frank. Let this be a cautionary tale that if you allow yourself to entertain your own delusion long enough, you'll end up in a position like Barney Frank, about to walk in to a haymaker from the living God and think you can deal with it by relaxing. just one of those ones you could just let play and let play. And it goes on for 17 and a half minutes or something like that. Speaking of, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan, talk about being caught by surprise. You get on a helicopter at the Indianapolis 500. You think you're going to the next. Boom, you're dead. Tragic. That's why we should all be prepared. Anyway, if I find out that I'm going to die, I can relax. I can deal with it by relaxing. Because I heard the gospel and I believed it, and I trust Jesus Christ is going to save me from the certain death and hell and punishment that I deserve for being such a horrible person. But Barney Frank never did. He never admitted that he was a horrible person. And he thinks he's doing pretty good, thinks he can relax. And boy, that's going to be a rough day. Okay, meanwhile, now speaking of dying unexpectedly, let's go to someone who's dying expectedly. Expectedly? I don't know how to say it. A former Republican Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse knows he's going to die, and he's known it for several months. And now he's revealed his dying wish for America. So forgive me, Mr. Sasse. If you know you're about to die, you should have way bigger fish to fry than worrying about your final wish for America, whatever that even means. As if your final wish for America is of any value to anyone or can accomplish anything. You really should be focused on the next world, right? Because, you know, America, I mean, Ben Sasse, he claims to be a Christian. He's a Republican, after all. But anyway, I would think that he would be talking about something other than, well, this. First of all, he told the CBS News, which is like going to the temple at Sodom to have them broadcast your final. It just strikes me as odd, him being such a rock-ribbed Republican, and I believe he's a strong Christian. That's what I've been told. He's not just a Christian, but a strong Christian. Ben Sasse. Yeah. So he goes to CBS News right into the Temple of Dagon, onto 60 Minutes, which is like the Holy of Holies. It's where they sacrifice the children and the virgins through the fire there in the Temple of Dagon. And he talks about his final wish for America is the following, quote, "I think we need to have more deliberation about our mortality and our finitude, to therefore get back to wisdom about what living a life of gratitude looks like. And I'd like a lot more dinner tables to turn off the devices and put them out of the room. Pour a big glass of wine, break bread together, and wrestle with some really grand questions about what you're building for your family and your next generation." So how a Christian who's about to die, I mean, within the next few minutes, days, weeks, maybe months, if he gets lucky, how a Christian does not mention Jesus or the gospel when given the opportunity to talk about his last wish for America, I cannot comprehend that. I mean, I'm not even on death's door. I mean, I might be. I could die in the next 15 minutes too, I suppose. But I haven't had a diagnosis announced, and they give me the 2 weeks, and I'm pushing 60, and so I'm thinking, man, I'm going to die pretty soon. So I'm feeling more and more of a sense that I'm obligated to tell the world the gospel more and more because, you know, I'm not going to be here that much longer. And I've squandered enough time as it is. But Ben Sasse, he's given a massive stage. I mean, 60 Minutes ain't what it used to be, but still. Millions of people watch. And they're almost all of them are about to die. And he doesn't mention the name of Jesus Christ or the gospel or how to get saved from hell or any of that. So color me skeptical that Ben Sasse is a Christian And I'm going to assume that Ben Sasse is on his way to hell with Jet Rockets. He might be Barney Frank there. In fact, Ben Sasse has passed himself off as a Christian for so long that he's probably harder to reach than Barney Frank, who's always been very open about the fact that he hates God, he hates Christians, he doesn't want to hear about Jesus, he doesn't want anybody judging anything he does. Barney Frank knows exactly who he is, and he's proud of it. Ben Sasse, nobody knows what that guy's all about. But I can tell you, a guy on his deathbed who doesn't mention Jesus or the gospel is not a Christian. That's all. Well, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Assume he's going straight to hell with Jet Rockets. If I can get a phone call with Ben Sasse, I'll preach him the gospel. Hopefully someone around him does, but I think he's deceived everyone around him for so long that he's going to die and nobody even realizes he needs to hear the gospel. That's a sad way to go. Everybody loves you, glad hand you, slap you on the back. You're such a great guy, Ben. And then the bottom drops out and you're sucked down into hell for all of eternity. Sad. All right. Now, speaking about hell for all eternity, we go to the Bad Religion file and we check in at the airport in Sri Lanka. Now, is Sri Lanka a country or is it a city? I always have a hard time. I think it's a country. 22 Sri Lankan monks were on their way back to Sri Lanka from Thailand, and they were arrested at the airport with 242 pounds of dope. Monks, I said. They were smuggling dope from Thailand into Sri Lanka. Now, the CBS News here reports that what they had was 242 pounds of powerful cannabis. Because nobody uses the word dope anymore. They don't even want to call it marijuana anymore because cannabis is now the accepted, it's a medical and commercially acceptable description of the dope. What your mom told you was dope and you shouldn't be smoking it, it's now cannabis, which is like medicine or tea or not like cigarettes. No, those are bad. But if you smoke cannabis, that's... Anyway, they say they were arrested at the airport with a record 242 pounds of dope. And I'm wondering, is that just a record for monks? Or is that like the all-time record? So, I mean, how often do you catch monks with suitcases full of drugs? Is there something in the Guinness Book regarding monks Anyway, we may or may not check in on this story again, but isn't it the death penalty in Sri Lanka or the all those Asian countries? If you're caught smuggling dope, no, you don't think they do the death penalty anymore? I thought like if you got caught smuggling dope into Japan, I mean, didn't John Lennon get busted with like one joint going into Japan and they were gonna like put him on trial? And there was the potential of the death penalty. That was back in like the 70s. Maybe that's not anymore. The Beatles didn't qualify as monks, although practically worshipped like religious leaders. I guess that's all I got on that. And what didn't one of the Beatles become a Buddhist? The guitar player that nobody could ever remember the guy's name. Anyway, speaking of all that, let's move on into the Justice System file, where we check in with the Trump administration's justice system, where long-term senior advisor to Anthony Fauci, a fella named David Morins, was indicted this past week on charges including conspiracy against the United States, destruction and falsification of records, concealment of records, and aiding and abetting. Aiding and abetting? Who? They don't say. Just aiding and abetting. Maybe they're waiting to ask him, hey, Dave, who were you aiding and abetting during all the COVID stuff that we just caught you lying about through your teeth? Lying, covering up, destroying. defrauding, conspiring. This guy's been accused of everything in the book short of actual physical crimes. David Morins, and maybe he's a long time senior advisor, maybe he's a long term senior advisor. You have to ask him about that. How nice was it working for Anthony Fauci? I'm sure that he was the most benevolent guy, right? At the top of the pile there was Fauci. I'm sure he treated Mr. Morins like a king all those years. Well, maybe we'll find out. We're going to find out how much Dave liked Anthony. How loyal is Dave to Anthony? Is Dave willing to go to prison for the rest of his life in order to not besmirch the legacy of Anthony Fauci? Morins is 78 years old. Fauci's like 112. Talk about guys who are about to meet God. This is the best thing that could happen to Fauci and Morins, is that before they die, somebody slaps them down and reminds them that they're human and that they're flawed. And maybe they'll stop for 5 minutes and consider the fact that maybe they're not good enough to go to heaven. That's the best thing that could happen for them. And it hasn't happened to Fauci yet, by the way. Fauci has not been indicted yet. In fact, the general wisdom is because Joe Biden, or at least Joe, whoever was running the auto pen for Joe Biden, they pardoned Fauci for everything that Fauci's ever done since he was 12 until 30 years after he's dead, the way they wrote that thing. They pardoned Fauci for anything and everything he's ever said, done, thought about, anything he's ever been accused of, anything his mom ever thought he did, he's been pardoned for by the President of the United States, or at least by the auto pen of the President of the United States. And so the prevailing wisdom is that no matter what Dave Morins says about Anthony Fauci, Anthony Fauci cannot be indicted because he's already been pardoned. So the folks here at Patriot.tv say, no, this shouldn't be the end of the story. This indictment reaffirms that truth matters, and those entrusted with power will ultimately answer for how they used or abused it, and they call for the indictment of Anthony Fauci. I read another article. I don't think I took it down. Anyway, people are saying, look, even though Fauci's been pardoned, he should be indicted just for principle so that we show, and there should be a trial because there's a chance we might be able to get him on something that wasn't covered that he might have done when he was 11 to plan COVID, because, you know, Biden's pardon only goes back to when Fauci was 12. We find something when he was 11 with the bats and the virus and the conspiracy, possibly. So they want to. And I agree, Anthony Fauci should be indicted and put on trial along with this guy. And almost every governing official involved in the COVID response, the coronavirus response, almost all of them should be put on trial for one thing or another, for what they did. For some of them, just for being cowards and wetting their pants in the face of a potential crisis. Again, I say it. The greatest failure of courage in the face of a potential crisis in the history of the world. And yeah, of course, you have to take all that and set it aside from the obvious political machinations to get Donald Trump out of the White House in 2020. That may have had more to do with it than the big flinch of all the puckering, wetting politicians and people, frankly. But anyway, this indictment of David Morins, the long-term senior advisor, who maybe longer-term together, maybe they go to hell together. That would be long-term. If they end up going to heaven, it'd be a long time. That was his long time. But I doubt if this comes to much. And if Fauci isn't indicted in the next couple weeks, he will have gotten away with one of the great criminal deceptions in all of world history. Which, I mean, that's of note, but he will also have to, just as the reporter says, those entrusted with power will ultimately answer for how they use or abuse. Now, the folks who write the article here, they want him to answer in court, but Anthony Fauci is going to answer to God. I remember when I first heard this song, that was the first song, I don't know if it was the first song off the Sammy Hagar, Van Hagar, Van Halen record there, 1986, right before I went into service, that record came out in the spring, late spring of 86, and I remember hearing that song and thinking to myself, that's blasphemy. The lyrics to that song, I knew they were blasphemous, and yet I listened to it anyway. But I liked the other songs on the record better than that song. Never really appreciated that song because even though when I was young and I rebelled against God, I still didn't want to make him mad. And like open blasphemy still scared me. I have to thank my mom and dad for preaching me the gospel when I was a little kid and I got saved. And so I always had a healthy fear of God. Even when I was rebelling against him and being an idiot, I had the good sense not to just appreciate open blasphemy. I remember thinking, like, that's more blasphemous than AC/DC singing Highway to Hell. So I remember thinking about that. And then, you know what I remember most of all about that record? I remember laying in boot camp the first night, and the big hit off the record was kept running through my head. Why can't this be love? And I'm thinking, why did I do this? Why did I? I'm telling myself, you wanted out of McCamey, Texas, because it's such a small podunk town. There's nothing going on. Why did you do this? I'm laying in boot camp thinking, what were you thinking about, moron? And I'm thinking, bow, dow, lee, loot, deet, doot, deet. I could be sitting in the back of a car, sipping a Coke, listening to Van Halen, and look at where. Anyway, that's what I thought about. So not that that really amounts to much of anything at all, except that that song reminded me of it. And the blasphemy angle. Speaking of knowing you're about to die, Sammy Hagar, 78 years old now. He got married the year I was born, I found out. Stayed married for a long time, too, and then he got a really big head when Van Halen went like triple mega platinum or whatever in the early 90s, and he divorces his wife of like 30 years. So anyway, he's about to die and meet God. He's probably relaxing, drinking some tequila. I don't think he was ever much of a drinker, actually. More of a blasphemer than a drinker. So now let's move on from that, from memories of Van Halen in high school and all of that, and then Anthony Fauci on his way to wherever he's going to end up, and then you and I here on the show here on our way to wherever we're going to end up, and we check in on the way with the state capitalism file. Have you heard of state capitalism? Yeah. Are you familiar? State capitalism is a term introduced by the communist Chinese to put a softer edge on communism. When the Chinese came out and said, look, we're not like straight up communists like before. You know, when we used to throw people in prison and murder their families and torture them and kill them and put them in the gulag and freeze them to death and starve them to death. We're not communists like that anymore. What we're about is state capitalism, which means we allow the people to be free to pursue their economic desires and lusts. And it works out pretty well because everybody has desires and lusts. And if we give them enough freedom to pursue that in the marketplace, they produce just enough money for us to be happy and wealthy and to fund our families and girlfriends and retirements and second and third chalets and all that the Chinese government does there with the with the fruit of the labors of all the communist Chinese slaves there, the people. And so state capitalism, it roared into the early 2000s. The Chinese economy was called the Roaring Tiger economy. You remember all that, right? Well, now the so-called conservatives here in America, the alleged right-wing conservatives, for example, the folks over at the Liberty Daily, which is one of my right-wing alternate conservative news sources where I go to get the news. Since I can't go to Matt Drudge anymore because that would just be embarrassing. So I go to Liberty Daily, and here's how they report the latest episode of so-called state capitalism that's occurring in Washington, D.C. They say at the Liberty Daily, the headline reads, President Trump offers a significant leg up to retirees. Trump creates new retirement option. A new retirement option. Who doesn't want that? One thing I appreciate in life is options. I like to have as many options as possible so that I can choose between the various options. I want the best option for me. And so I read that headline and I'm thinking, Donald Trump is a great guy. He's providing options. Who doesn't want options? But then you read the story and you find out that the new retirement option being offered by Donald Trump and the Trump administration and the government in general is a new retirement plan that will include a contribution to the retirement program of one person. If that person earns less than $35,000 a year, that person will be entitled to $1,000 from other people. And that money will be taken from those people and given to the guy making less than 35 grand. And those people, they're not even going to be asked about it. It's going to be taken from them whether they like that guy, whether or not they don't like that guy, whether they even know that guy. The money's going to be taken from those people by force. And it's going to be given to the other guy who makes under 35 grand a year. And the conservative media reports that as a new retirement option. When even 10 years ago, a Democrat doing this, they would have said that's socialism. But nobody says that anymore because nobody really realizes that anymore. Trump's socialism somehow passes under the radar of the conservative media. So if you make less than $35,000 a year, who makes less than $35,000 a year anymore? Are there still people like that? How much is that? That doesn't seem like a lot these days. I mean, when a meal at McDonald's costs like $30 for two people. How do you live on 35 grand a year? I suppose there are people making less than 35 grand a year. But if you are making less than $35,000, I think you've demonstrated that you're not worthy of any of my money. If you were worthy of more money, you'd be making more than 35 grand a year. Why should I give you any money? Oh, it doesn't matter. It's going to be taken from me by force and given to this other guy. Why? So that Donald Trump can purchase votes. No, Doug, Donald Trump loves America. He's not even going to run for president anymore. Donald Trump is putting in place a political and family and otherwise a political machine that he hopes will operate in America for the next 100 years. How do I know that? Because that's the kind of guy Donald Trump is. I know exactly what he is. And those of you who think he's someone other than he is, you've been duped. You think Donald Trump just loves America and he wants what's best for America. That ain't who Donald Trump is. Donald Trump's out for Donald Trump and building Donald Trump's family and his fortune and now his political machine and legacy that he hopes will, for 1,000 years, he hopes. He hopes his name will be alongside the name of Julius Caesar and Alexander the Great someday. That's who Donald Trump is. And he's willing to take $1,000 from you and I and give it to a guy we don't know, and maybe a guy we don't even like. Maybe a guy we wouldn't even hire. I mean, he's only making 35 G's. Maybe I don't need that guy. So, or you know what? On the other hand, maybe he's a hardworking guy. Maybe I really like this guy. I'd really like to help this guy. Maybe I do want to hire the guy making 35. But now Donald Trump steals the money that might have helped my company to hire the guy, but now I don't have the money. And furthermore, now maybe I start resenting this guy making 35 grand because Donald Trump just took some money from me and gave it to him. How come Donald Trump isn't giving me any money? And then I get in line. And pretty soon, I'm as bad as everyone else. I'm at the government trough waiting for my slop to be handed out. And pretty soon, they've stolen something from everyone and they've bought off everybody. And nobody even realizes they've been duped into state capitalism. And before you know it, all your kids are speaking Chinese and you're wondering what happened. Okay. So there. I'm not a big fan of the state capitalism. I'm not a fan of Donald Trump giving $1,000 to newborn babies or to people who make less than $35,000 a year. And I'm even less of a fan of all of the alleged conservative media allowing him to get away with it because they've got so much invested in their love for Donald Trump that they can never admit that they were wrong. The first step in solving a problem is admitting there's a problem, ladies and gentlemen. And in fact, what the conservative media will do instead, they'll report on this and they'll say, Donald Trump, he's given us some great options. And by the way, have you heard about that liberal socialist mayor up in Seattle? Have you heard about her? Here, come here, look at this story. Don't look over there. No, the $1,000 that came out of your bank account, don't worry about that. Come in. Have you heard the silly mayor, Katie Wilson, up in Seattle? That's right. So you go, and now you check in with Breitbart, and they're going to give you the story. This is from the murder-suicide file, by the way. Mayor Katie Wilson was giving a speech before a bunch of alleged human beings, although there's no confirmation that this actually happened. I find it hard to believe that this person, Katie Williams, even exists. I think this all could be a hoax, an AI hallucination that Katie Wilson is actually the mayor of Seattle. At least I hope that for the sake of the people who still live in Seattle. So she's giving a speech about taxes and life in Seattle and how wonderful everything is and how good people are there and how little they smoke and how much coffee they drink and how wonderful Seattle is. It's not really as cloudy as you think, as a matter of fact. And there's the millionaire tax. There's a millionaire tax that's slated to start in January. And there has been a documented exodus of millionaires from Seattle. Why? Because of the millionaire tax. They don't want to give the state $100,000 come January 1st, so they're moving. And she's asked about that. And she says she doesn't care. She says that, I think, here's the quote from the alleged mayor. Is she the mayor? Let me see. Yeah, mayor of Seattle, supposedly, if she even exists. When the subject of the millionaire's tax came up and the documented fleeing of dozens, if not hundreds of millionaires from Seattle ahead of the tax, she said, quote, I think the claims that millionaires are going to leave our state are like super overblown. And the ones that leave, well, like bye, unquote, she says. At which point, every Republican grabs his MAGA hat and turns it around backwards and laughs and forgets that Donald Trump just stole $1,000 from you to give to the guy making 35. Because we're busy laughing at Katie Wilson, who's just a flat-out communist. We know what's in Seattle, for crying out loud. Anyway, so we have a little bit more. Because now that I've pointed out that you're not allowed to forget about the $1,000 Don is stealing from you to give to other people, now we can laugh at the socialist mayor. attendees at the alleged speech from this alleged person laughed and applauded at her remarks. She continued by laying out options in terms of progressive taxation. She actually used that statement. She used that phrase in the next part of her speech. After laughing about the millionaires and doubting and blowing off the millionaires fleeing her tax, she then starts laying out, talking about what are our options for, like, you know, like progressive taxation. She asked, whatever. And the audience, who I would have to assume was a superimposed AI creation and not real, because if things are actually this bad in Seattle, then it very well could fall off into the bay at any moment. Another article that I was reading over this past week that I didn't pull down and print out because it was from my average moron Yahoo feed. And I wonder if these stories are even real half the time, so I'm afraid to talk about them. And I don't have time to do all the research, but they had an article that named the guitar riff intro to I Can't Get No Satisfaction by the Rolling Stones as the greatest guitar riff intro in the history of all music.
That is
right, at least in the history of rock and roll, that is the greatest riff. And so I just want to log an official protest. I would put, there are about 150 riffs from the 80s alone that I think are more recognizable and more memorable than the riff from Satisfaction by the Rolling Stones. The Rolling Stones are living proof that the devil doesn't always get a good deal when he makes a deal, but he's got to work with whatever he's got. And so anyway, but meanwhile, so at least 150. That one right there, the one that we just played, that riff, in my mind, not only technically superior to the relatively stoned, slow, half-drunk riff introducing Satisfaction, which, by the way, Keith Richards claims... Have you read the story, the claim, how he came up with that riff? He claims he went to sleep one night, put a tape in the recorder, woke up in the morning, the guitar was no longer on the stand, it was in his bed, he woke up, and there was the riff on the tape. So he says, I awakened in the night, I played the riff, I don't even remember it. Which leads some people to believe that it came from the pit of hell delivered by Satan himself. And I think it would have been a better riff if it was actually delivered by Satan himself. I think Keith Richards passed out, pretty wasted that night, somehow recorded that riff drunk, half asleep, and in my opinion, that's about what it sounds like. All right, now, so not that it's not, I'm not saying it's not a serviceable riff, don't get me wrong. I mean, you could, obviously they built a song around it, but I'm just saying, the greatest riff of intro of all time, please. Okay, so how do you go from Keith Richards to Alex Jones? So I'm going to show you. This is why I'm a professional and you should not try this at home, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. In wake of the news that the guitar riff for Satisfaction was voted the greatest of all time. InfoWars shut down. Alex Jones called it quits. He said, I can't take this anymore. If ever there was a greater hoax perpetrated on mankind, it's never existed. Keith Richards should not have that, and I'm declaring an InfoWars shutdown because actually the two stories may or may not be related. We know that Alex Jones was bankrupted after claiming that the children slaughtered at Sandy Hook Elementary were actors and that their families were fake, and then the family sued him, and a judge awarded the families $1.4 billion, even though Alex Jones didn't have that kind of money. And so what it was the judge making sure that he put Alex Jones out of business. Because, you know, saying that a bunch of kids who got shot to death and that they're fake and that their families don't exist, that could be very offensive to families, very hurtful. And that's the kind of thing that should drive a media type into, I don't know, maybe opening a shoe store, getting a real job, becoming a meat cutter or a welder, a machinist. Alex Jones should be working anonymously in a factory somewhere, but he's not because even though there's a $1.4 billion judgment against him, because we live in America in the 21st century and there's no such thing as justice and nothing happening in the courthouse is really all that serious anymore, Alex Jones is allowed to continue operating even though he hasn't paid the $1.4 billion. And it shouldn't be that way. Whether you're for or against the judge's ruling against Alex Jones. Whether you're for or against it, if a judge imposes a ruling, you shouldn't be able to defy that ruling through loopholes and all kinds of shenanigans. And it would have been the best thing for Alex Jones. The best thing that could have happened to him was that he would have had to get a real job instead of now he's just going to continue to operate in the shadows, in the background with a podcast. Who doesn't have a podcast anymore, for crying out loud? And so he'll continue to peddle his relatively inaccurate view of the world until he dies. And by the way, when he signed off, he had to sign off the official InfoWars. It's all been bankrupted, so he has to walk away from the name and the brand and all of that. And so when he shut down InfoWars after, do they say how many years on the air? He's been on the air for at least 20 years, maybe longer. Here's how Alex Jones signed up. Now, are you all familiar with Alex Jones? He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer. Do you remember who he is? Alex Jones, he's the guy, he always warned us about the contrails, the fluoride, no, the Branch Davidians.
Not interest.
Anyway, Alex Jones he's a hack who threw out every possible conspiratorial allegation against the government, the CIA, the FBI, the ATF, and just about everybody. He threw them all out there on the air as grist over the course of 20 years and made a very good living off it. And then after COVID, we realized that one or two of the things that he said had some basis in truth, and everybody started to say, Alex Jones is a prophet. He's a genius. COVID was probably the one thing that kept Alex Jones in the entertainment business. The reason he doesn't have to get a real job is because of COVID. Anthony Fauci should be thrown in prison for, if nothing else, for making it so Alex Jones could continue to be in the show business, for crying out loud. But Alex Jones, here's how he signed off. After the bankruptcy, the final minute, he says, quote, all glory goes to Jesus Christ, our Heavenly Father. We are committing ourselves to God in this holy fight. And we are committed. And if God stands with us, who can stand against us? And that's how I close out. And then the music started and the credits started rolling. And
that's a holy fight.
The moving company came in and started carting away the furniture. What's that now?
It's a holy fight.
Oh, he's always been involved in a holy fight. Come on. I can't tell you how many times I stopped. I'd be driving, listening to Alex Jones, and he would say something so profound from the Bible that it would enlighten my mind and my heart. I would have to pull over and start praying. Actually, I never heard Alex Jones quote one Bible verse on the air. Now, I will confess that I never listened to his show. I did, actually, a couple times. There's some times when you're driving across, like, Utah or Nevada or Idaho, where there just aren't any radio stations except one that you can barely get in and out, and that would always be Alex Jones. And so when I was down to nothing driving cross-country, I did listen to Alex Jones. But I'm willing to issue a challenge right now on the air that if anyone can produce audio or video of Alex Jones preaching the gospel, I will personally bankroll the rest of Alex Jones's career in show business. If Alex Jones never once preached the gospel. He obviously doesn't know the Bible. He said all glory goes to Jesus Christ, our Heavenly Father. So anyway, Alex, you could have at least read up on the vernacular before you gave Jesus lip service, signing off so that you could further bamboozle relatively ignorant Christians into continuing to fund your stint in show business. If God stands with us, who can stand against us, he says. Alex, that's a misquote of the verse that you're going for in Romans. I'm not even going to tell you it. I'm just going to encourage you, Alex, to look up the actual verse and figure out what it means before you start blasphemously throwing it around in order to further bamboozle, again, relatively stupid Christians to continue to fund your stint in show business. All right. Now, so we go from Keith Richards to Alex Jones, I'm sorry, to the justice file. And we'll probably close out on this a little bit early because I really don't have anything else of interest. I have some other stories here, but This I'm going to close with this because this is just encouraging news on the justice front. And it's a cautionary tale. So everybody out there who thought they got away with something, you're wrong. You're not getting away with anything. Case in point, James Lawhead Jr., 64 years old. Back in November of 1991, he was living in California, in Placer County, California, when a young mother, 35-year-old mother, her name was Cindy Wanner. She disappeared from her home November 25th, 1991. She left her 11-month-old child alone in a high chair and literally vanished. Her car was still there. Her shoes and coat were still there. She just vanished. 3 weeks later, her body was found in a remote area. She had been strangled to death. The case went unsolved since 1991. A few months ago, authorities submitted one final piece of evidence for DNA testing. And it connected to the killer, Lawhead. His name is Lawhead, by the way. I didn't make that up. Lawhead Jr., which Lawhead Jr. even. Okay. And so now he's been arrested in Bullhead City, Arizona. And listen to how the folks at Fox News report this. This is how bad things have gotten, ladies and gentlemen. Those of you who think Fox are conservatives or anything good, just, anyway, here's what they say. He was arrested in Bullhead City on, he faces charges stemming from the 1991 kidnapping and murder of Cindy Wanner. So he hasn't been arrested regarding charges stemming from the kid. He's been arrested for kidnapping her and killing her. But in urinalism, you're not allowed to say anything that directly associates anyone with any responsibility for anything ever. And they've taught all the urinalists this for the last 30 years that I've been watching. And I'm telling you, it's bad. Because people need to understand when they read how to associate things with responsibility. And the more you do that, the more you're screwing up people's minds. It's no wonder half the country's on prescription drugs. The urinalists have poisoned their minds with gobbledygook designed to confuse you and keep you in a mist and a fog. Listen to this. They say that Lawhead was 30 at the time of Wagner's alleged murder. Alleged murder? Wanner, I'm sorry. Is it Wanner? Yeah, Wanner, not Wagner. That's a typo. Not my typo, by the way. Fox News typo. Lawhead, the killer, was 30 at the time of Wanner's alleged murder. Well, nobody's alleging she was murdered. We all know she was murdered. Ask your family. They've been suffering for 35 years. There's no alleged murder here. Well, she was found strangled and maybe it was an accident. No. But urinalists, they stick the word alleged in even when it's not appropriate. Anyway, this story just it gets to me because 1991 is a particular year in my life, and I was in California at the time, and I just wondered when I saw this headline, I wonder if this was anyone I knew. Because it says, killer arrested after 35 years, 1991, California. I'm thinking, I might have known this killer. Well, it turns out I didn't know this particular guy. But, I apologize for hammering on Fox News. Let me close the loop here with something that's more, well, disturbing and meaningful and emblematic of the problem that faces us as we all begin to understand our own mortality and that we're all going to meet God and that he's going to judge us. If you don't think you're going to meet God and you don't think he's going to judge you, you're a fool. You've deluded yourself with fantasy. You're going to meet him and he's going to judge, and you better be ready. And you know what? You can't be ready yourself. You need an advocate. You need his son, Jesus Christ, to forgive your sins and to stand between you and the wrath of an almighty God. That's what you need. And so you better get it, okay? Now listen to this, the problem we have on earth right now. This 30-year-old maniac was released from prison in 1991. He killed this mother, Cindy Wanner, this maniac who killed Cindy Wanner, was released from prison in 1991 after serving 11 years behind bars for unspeakable crimes involving a child. I'm not going to get into it. It's unspeakable what this guy was in jail for. And they let him out. And like a vicious animal released from a cage, he goes out and he murders a young mother. This guy should be put on trial immediately, soon, quick. And upon conviction, he should be put to death painfully and publicly. Why? For your good and mine. And for his, by the way. For the good of everyone who sees what happens to a maniac like this, so that it might prevent them from acting on their ungodly impulses and appetites and lusts that drive us all. This guy had the same appetites and lusts that drive all of us. He just acted on them. And if he's not put to death swiftly and painfully, other people might act on those similar appetites and lusts and do similar horrible, awful things to children and to mothers, and we can't have that. And then for his own good, he needs to be put on trial, shown what a horrible, awful human being he is, and told you're about to meet God. And he's going to settle up with you, buddy, one way or another. And then you tell him about Jesus Christ and tell him, you know what? As horrible and awful as you are, even though you've done what you've done, Jesus actually could forgive your sins, and he wants to. And all you have to do is believe him and trust him for it. And then maybe this guy ends up not going straight to hell with Jet Rockets. Maybe him and Ben Sass and Barney Frank can all find an off-ramp. There is an off-ramp on the highway to hell. And maybe they can find it together, but that's what it takes. And that's what we advocate here at the Weekly Worldview, and we're glad to have you tune in with us. We will hopefully return next time. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.